views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Welcome to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. Claudette brings fresh, innovative perspectives that push the boundaries of what organizational cultures can and should be. Learn how to catalyze your organization's workforce into an authentic, intentional, and financially successful culture. Now here's your host, Claudette Rowley.
Hi, everybody. This is Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour, and let us help you experience some groundbreaking ways to transform your company's culture. Twice each month, we have some of the foremost experts on organizational culture and leadership helping you understand how to make a brilliant culture the rule rather than the exception. Today, I'm really excited to have Dr. David Krueger with us, and he and I are going to be talking about the neuroscience of change, which I am so looking forward to. So David Krueger, MD, is an executive mentor coach and CEO of MentorPath, an executive coaching, training, publishing, and wellness firm. His work integrates psychology and neuroscience with strategic coaching to help executives and professionals write the next chapter of their life or business stories. He's the author of 20 trade and professional books on success, wellness, money, and self-development, as well as the author of 75 scientific papers. His latest book, The Secret Language of Money, is a business bestseller, which has been translated into 10 languages. He's also a mentor coach and dean of curriculum for the Coach Training Alliance and has been quoted in several publications, including Money, Fortune, Forbes, Town and Country, The New York Times, and The Wall Street Journal. He's the founder and director of his own licensed, specialty-certified New Life Story Wellness Coaching and New Money Story Mentor Training, and has trained professionals worldwide and also develops internal mentor programs for corporations. Dr. Krueger formerly practiced and taught psychiatry and psychoanalysis and was a clinical professor of psychiatry. In addition, he's founded and served as CEO for two healthcare corporations, co-founded a third startup that went from venture capital to merger acquisition, and founded Houston Gathering of Angels, an angel investment firm. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks, Claudia. It's a privilege to be here.
Oh, I've been really looking forward to our conversation. And I know you and I met last fall when you were presenting at a conference, and so much of what you said just aligned with the ways that I think, and I just thought, wow, I'd love to share your expertise and all of your wisdom with our listeners. So I'm really happy you're here.
Well, I'm excited about it too, obviously.
So one of the things, you know, I was curious about, and, you know, it was referenced in your the bio I just shared, you were a psychiatrist for a really long time, right? And then you transitioned into mentor coaching and executive coaching. And what led you to make that change?
Well, I had planned to retire at 25 years from psychiatry, psychoanalysis, from practicing and teaching, and I had actually planned to write and ranch. I have a weekend ranch and have an operation there. That lasted about 2 months, and I realized I wanted to contribute more, be more interactive with people, and do a number of things, and had a much greater purpose in that. So I did training for becoming a professional coach. I had had an exposure to somebody who had done executive coaching in the early 90s. Two of my analytic patients went to Canada, Toronto, to work for a day and a half. At that time, it was $25,000 for a day and a half working with a client. And this guy had remarkable results. And I would hear the results of that, and it kind of logged in as something that would be of interest, and that's something I immediately began to look at when I knew that after 2 months that there was more that I wanted to do and needed to do.
Yeah. And so isn't that interesting how that so often happens? We think, oh, yeah. This is it, right? I'm going to go to my ranch.
So I know how to help mentor coach people who are in career transitions and how to do a little bit better plan of it than I did.
Right. And so thanks for sharing that. It's really interesting. One of the concepts I was really struck by in your presentation I heard, and then also as I reviewed your website, was this idea of mind over matters. Can you share more about that concept with us?
Well, there's so much of what we do on a day-by-day basis that has to do with how we both resist change and how we have challenges with change in a number of ways. For example, part of the way we resist change is we stay in a comfort zone. It's secure and predictable. A comfort zone can be limiting or uncomfortable, but it's familiar. It's a default mode. And that creates the illusion of effectiveness when we repeat something, because any new story generates an uncertainty and a trepidation. And the fastest and easiest way to end this discomfort is to go back to the familiar, the old story. So there's always the pull of the old and the fear of the new. So part of the answer to why change is difficult is in our minds, as I've just mentioned, and part of the answer is it's in our brains as well. For example, and you've heard me tell this story, the hypnotherapist Milton Erickson told a story from his childhood in which whenever it snowed, he would be the first to get up and go to school so that he could create a fresh path in the snow. He intentionally created a really circuitous path, zigzags, indirect turns, and he noticed that each person who followed him followed the same path. Until the end of the day, the path was really well-worn, despite its really circuitous route. And even though he did this a number of times and got even more diabolical in twists and turns, not a single person created a new path that was more direct. This is how neural pathways are laid down in the brain, by early experiences, then repeated until they're etched more deeply, even if they don't work as well, even if they're circuitous and require way more work. So to think creatively, we have to create new neural pathways outside the cycle of experience. And stimulation for a new insight may be a circumstance where the brain can't predict what will happen next. Or the catalyst for insight may be a novel stimulus, new information, new context, or, as you know, mentor coaching to ask powerful questions.
And this is so interesting. I remember you using this phrase, the superhighway of the familiar. And I loved that because it just was so applicable. Like, oh, we all, superhighway of the familiar. Oh, yeah, we all kind of get that, right?
Yeah, we just fall into that. Yeah, is the way our brains work. That from an evolutionary standpoint, whenever we repeat something enough times, our brain grooves a new pathway and a new neuronal network to make it automatic, to make it the default mode. For example, we drive the same way to work every day. After a month or so, we don't have to think about it. We can listen to a book on audio. But one day, there's construction, we have to snake the way through the neighborhood, and we can't pay attention. It takes more energy. So this superhighway of the familiar is exactly what's happened in terms of the ways we do things in a routine way, things that have become the default mode. Even if they don't work as well, it's way easier travel on this superhighway of the familiar than it is to get off of it, take a machete and create something new or different, even though it may be a more direct route to where you want to be. So the temptation is the pull of the old because it's easy. Even if that superhighway doesn't go where we want it to, it's easy travel. And it ends anxiety and uncertainty for the predictable and the familiar. So this is a challenge that we have to tolerate, the anxiety, the uncertainty, the trepidation, in order to try something new and to see and read that trepidation or uncertainty, not as in an old model where maybe anxiety equals danger, better head for cover, and it makes sense to stop, but this can be reframed as this is validation of new territory, a signpost of being and doing something new and different.
And, it's so interesting what you mentioned about the illusion of effectiveness, right? This illusion of effectiveness, we stay in the familiar and we continue to tell, or at least at times, tell ourselves the story, it sounds like, that this is effective. We'll just stay here. This is working. When in fact, maybe it sounds like other people outside of you might be able to look at the situation and say, that's not working.
Exactly.
Right?
I once had a very well-known editor, when he was looking at my last book on money, he said, Dave, I don't know how to tell my money story to myself in order to know what to change. And I thought this amazingly captured the essence of the difficulty that we have in being objective about ourselves, in being able to look at what we do in an automatic way. Now, from a mind and brain science perspective, what we know now from neuroscientists is that over 90% of our operating system is automatic. It's unconscious. This means that the algorithms of behavior, of emotion, of connection with other people, all of these patterns, we may see evidence of it, but it's not like this is the story I'm writing. It's like this is the way things are. Now, someone else more objectively may be able to see that something's not working, or that we keep writing a storyline that has a dead end or a glass ceiling, but we're often the last to recognize it. And
the last to know, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And the sort of the paradox is that more information isn't enough, because that's also an illusion that information is going to change someone. And think about it this way. If information were enough, we'd all be rich. We'd all eat vegetables every day. We'd work out every day. We'd all be thin. And a lot of librarians would be billionaires. But information is not enough, because the illusion is that once somebody sees something our way, then they're going to sign on to do it. But that's not the way the mind and the brain works. So that's why it's so important, as you mentioned in the introduction, to understand how the mind and the brain works, because so many of the principles and the strategies that we apply for change are contrary to how the mind and the brain work. So once there's an alignment, it can be dynamite. In a good way.
Absolutely. Yeah, dynamite in a good way, right. In a positive way. So, and I'm fascinated by this, like how so many of the strategies that we look at for changing ourselves or other people are actually contrary to what's necessary. So right now we're going to take a quick break, because I'd love to come back, touch back on this, because it's such a fascinating topic and I think so interesting for folks to learn more about. So you are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to learn more about how we can align our change strategies with where we really want to go.
Don't you wish you had more joy in your life? Check out the new book by Robert Max Schoenfeld, For the Love of Joy. A 30-day adventure for creating joy in your life, because you deserve more joy, more love, more health, more abundance, and more life. Available now on Amazon. Get your copy today. Visit theartofpowerfulliving.com. That's theartofpowerfulliving.com.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days, because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Stay juicy. Tune in to Your Juicy Love with me, Una Drake, co-hosting monthly with Dr. Pat, and every second Monday at 12 p.m. on Transformation Talk Radio. My show, Your Juicy Love, helps you find the dynamic, life-affirming love you've always wanted. Transform your relationships and bring peace, joy, and juicy, juicy love to planet Earth. For more information, visit unadrake.com.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
If you have been struggling with fear and anxiety, you know how debilitating these emotions can be. You constantly doubt yourself, you can't make decisions, and feel more and more insecure and stuck. Dr. Friedman Schaub's book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, will provide you with the insights and tools to break through these challenges. Through a step-by-step process, Dr. Schaub explains how to resolve the subconscious root causes of fear and anxiety and build a strong foundation of inner peace and confidence. Visit www.thefearandanxietysolution.com and get your copy now.
Order your copy of Dr. Friedman Schaub's The Fear and Anxiety Solution today. Visit thefearandanxietysolution.com for more information.
On Cultural Brilliance Radio, I'm Claudette Rowley, and if you are just joining us, my guest today is Dr. David Krueger, and he and I are talking about the neuroscience of change, and we are deep into it here, talking about and understanding how change really works in the brain, and it's not just our thoughts, and it's not just our perceptions of things, it's also what's actually happening in our brains. And Dave, you and I had just started to touch on that sometimes when we're trying to make a change, some of the strategies we employ are actually contrary to what we're trying to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To give you an example of that and incorporate what we had talked about just briefly about what we know from neuroscience now about the majority, 90 to 95% of our operating systems are unconscious. What that means is that we may create a conscious, logical surface story, such as, I want to generate more income and create wealth. But because of the algorithms that have been laid down from very early on about the meanings of money and various things, a shadow story that can be up to 90 or 95% contributory here can go in the opposite direction and not even be conscious. For example, well, you know, I don't really think I have what it takes to make a lot of money, or you know, a great deal of wealth would be unspiritual. Or, you know, what if I try and take all this time away from myself and my family and then fail? Then I'll be really embarrassed. Any number of things. Now, those are more conscious, but any number of things can be a shadow story that can go in the opposite direction and create stuckness and somebody be not aware of why they're stuck or think of it in a different way. Now, here's an example of what I mean about think of it in a different way. The emotional part of our brains process information significantly faster than the conscious, logical, intellectual part of our brain. So whenever any stimulus comes in, it comes in immediately to the midbrain. It's sorted by the amygdala and then passed on to the hippocampus to assign meaning. This is the location of the unconscious. Whenever psychoanalysts talk about the unconscious, this is where it is. It's in the midbrain, the little hippocampus that has to do with creativity and memory. It assigns meaning, and then that stimulus is passed to the prefrontal cortex to make it logical and conscious and sensible. So see how this takes a little bit of time. It takes several seconds. Neuroscientists and especially neuroeconomists now know that we make decisions, especially purchase decisions, several seconds before we're even consciously aware of them. And many neuroscientists now have acknowledged that the primary purpose of the forebrain is to make decisions we've already made at a midbrain level, conscious and logical and sensible. Now, it may not always be a cause and effect, but that's how purchase decisions are made so quickly. And purchase decisions have to do, if you put 20 items in front of somebody and hook them up to a functional brain scan and have them look at each item sequentially, you can tell by looking at their brain scan which item they're going to buy, because the item that resonates with and activates the part of the brain that has to do with their sense of self, their identity, that's the one they're going to purchase. So that's why things that we do, as you mentioned, like at a corporate level and creating cultural experiences within an organization, has to have an identity, and it has to resonate with the individual identities of the people there, or it really won't be subscribed to.
So in other words, this is fascinating. So if I'm at a store and I'm trying to decide between two different sweaters to buy, something like that, right? Uh-huh. Just for the simplistic example, right? I'm trying to decide between two. So it sounds like what you're saying is that at some level, I've probably already decided, and I'm just trying to get the rest of my brain is trying to kind of catch up and maybe justify that decision.
When you look at those sweaters, all the sweaters you look at, there's going to be one, perhaps, let's say, that really fits more with, this is me. This is who I am. And when that part of your brain is activated, it's going to be only a matter of time until you purchase that sweater. You know, the same with a car. You know, I have a brand of car that I identify with. When I get ready for a new car, I may test drive two or three, but I know what I'm going to go back to because that's my identity. I've had the same brand since 1977, and that didn't feel right driving any other car. I tried it for 2 years, and it was awkward. So that's what I'm talking about.
Right, yeah. So it has more to do with the fact what you identify with, right?
Exactly.
It's your identity.
Think about the experience of traveling to a foreign country and suddenly finding somebody from your hometown, that kind of that kind of relief, that kind of communication, that's what I'm talking about. That has a brain basis without our even being consciously aware of it in terms of purchases, in terms of decisions that we make, in terms of companies that we align with. Brands, for example, the brands will immediately tell you whether you're going to think about it this way. For the listener, who is your favorite living author? Now, a name immediately came to your mind. Now, when that person puts out a new book, you know you're going to buy it. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to research it or read review. You know you're going to buy it. That's a brand. That's an identity. You identify with that person and that brand, and you know you're going to purchase it. Things like that happen on a daily basis, of things that we screen for. There are millions of bits of data that come into us as stimuli throughout the day. Whatever we focus on, whatever we pay attention to, just like a camera has a specific area of focus, when we focus on something, that's what we attend to, and that's what informs our decisions, even the small part that may be conscious. So our attention also is a way to determine how we proceed and how successful we are.
So in an organization, just along these lines of identity, you know, one of the things I do, organizational development, cultural consulting, and so I'm helping to manage big change processes. And one of the, with a lot more detail than that, but one of the things that comes up a lot that I'll talk to folks about is the identity change required, right? And I was curious if it's similar to what you're talking about, that if our organization has always operated, you know, A, B, C, D, and E, we always do it this way. And now we're realizing that in order for us to succeed or grow differently, we need to change that a bit. It strikes me that often, and I'll talk very openly with people about it, that it's some of the tension and anxiety internally is we're asking them to at least at some level shift some of their identity. Do you think that's accurate?
I do. In fact, that fits so much with Now, bear with me here for a minute to get to that bottom line, because I think it's crucial. And how you get to that bottom line, I think, is essential to really successfully create change. The principle is, whatever we do, whatever change or behaviors that are different that we engage in, unless we also change our identity, we're going to revert back to the old identity. The most powerful force of the human psyche is that we return to our core identity. So any change has to do with systematically looking at how to go about creating change, that the final step, and throughout, not just a, you know, a final step, but a part of each aspect is the transformation of the basic model that we operate on, the model of how and who we are, as well as how and who the company is at that level. So this is a synopsis of a systematic way of understanding and deconstructing a story, whether that's individual or corporate, and a way of creating a new story. Now, I apply it to the wellness coaches and the new money story mentor coaches I apply, I train. There's a 7-step process to deconstruct a story and to write code for a new one. It's a roadmap. The roadmap is the acronym to recognize authorship of a story, to recognize you're writing your own story, even though it doesn't seem like a story, it just seems like the way things are, but to recognize it's not there until you create it. To own the story, to own that you're writing it, to assess what needs to change, to assess the components, and then decide the change action to take to author those changes, to then bring about, through those changes, deciding and authoring the changes, to finally, the P is program new identity, to create a transformation of how and who someone sees themselves to be in order to make change permanent. That's what makes change permanent, is when identity is transformed as well as the story that one's writing, especially when it involves behavioral change and move away from a default mode. So you're absolutely right about the essential aspect of identity and how that's a final step that has to be addressed in a systematic way in order to make change permanent.
Yeah, thank you for going through that. I think that's so important, right? As you said, to break it down, you know, into these different steps. And the steps that you're talking about, I believe I saw, at least at a high level, on your website, correct? Is that correct?
Yeah.
That I saw. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. And and actually,
articles, there's a blog started out to be, when I did my last book, a blog on money, psychology, neuroeconomics, but it's kind of transformed into the Neuro Mentor blog about mind and brain sciences applied to various aspects that are hopefully useful to people.
Before we take a quick break, it would be great to have you share, you know, if people want to learn more, and I hope that they do, they want to reach out to you through email or review your website, what are the best ways for them to do that?
Well, I would welcome that. If there are things that we don't cover or don't cover adequately or just questions, my email directly to me is dkruger, D-K-R-U-E-G-E-R, @mentorpath.com, MENTORPATH.com. And that's my website, mentorpath.com. There are some articles, a couple of webinars, a blog, some different informational aspects that hopefully will be of use.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that. We are going to take a quick break. This is Claudette Rowley on Cultural Brilliance Radio, here with my guest, Dr. Dave Kruger. We'll stay tuned. We'll be right back to continue talking about this really interesting concept of identity, how it impacts change, and one of my favorite ideas is how mindsets are contagious. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Winning at the game of money. Lynn Brown is now offering Full Spectrum Finance, a progressive 12-month program that will help you to navigate through the mechanics of financial expansion. Finally, a financial planner who looks at the full spectrum of money and abundance. Engage you in the mental, physical, and energetic aspects of finance. This is Full Spectrum Finance. Are you ready to get into it? For more information, go to fullspectrumfinance.com.
Tune in to the hit show, Raging Skillet Radio, Mouthing Off with Chef Rossi. Chef Rossi mouths off about different subjects in pursuit of breaking down walls and opening up your minds. She and Dr. Pat banter back and forth, taking from the headlines of the day on subjects that reach beyond what goes on in the world into your hearts. And go to theragingskillet.com to find out more and let Chef Rossi know what's on your mind.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Choose the new earth on the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each week on Transformation Talk Radio as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. The Cornelia Stephanie Show is your catalyst for anchoring heaven on earth on a global scale. For more information, go to CorneliaStephanie.com.
Best-selling author, spiritual life, and business coach Joe Nunziata brings his higher energy and no-nonsense style to people who are ready to make powerful changes now. Wake up, step up, power up with a shot of Joe. Join Joe the second and fourth Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern for 30 minutes of high energy, no-nonsense, and powerful tools to make powerful changes. Visit joenunz.com. That's joenunz.com.
Hi, everybody. We are back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I am Claudette Rowley here with my guest, Dr. Dave Kruger, and we are talking about the neuroscience of change for those of you who have just joined us. And one of the things we wanted to make sure to touch on today, right, was this idea of how mindsets are contagious. And one of the things I notice in my work in organizations is that it's most people don't know that mindsets are contagious. Except they'll say like, oh, so-and-so's, you know, the quote, bad apple, right? You know, he or she's going to poison everything, so let's make sure they don't. But that's kind of as far as most organizations get in understanding this idea of contagion. So would you mind telling us about this? How are mindsets contagious?
Okay, great question, and a couple of ways to think about it. One is that what we know is that for any gap in performance, mindset is more significantly responsible than intelligence and motivation. And for successful achievement and confidence, confidence is more important than competence and expertise. So in a way, we're talking about mindsets. And one way to think about this, Einstein talked about the unified field theory. He said, basically, we are a bundle of energy and interact with another person who is also a bundle of energy. And that intersubjectivity, that interaction of two energy fields has a mutual influence on one another. What we know more about now is that there are mirror neurons in the brain that have to do with a component of this. And as I mentioned, the amygdala is how the state of mind is exactly contagious with someone else's state of mind. Just this is how we can have intuition or sense when somebody comes in the room. Are they engaging? Are they open? Is there something negative? We can immediately sense this, especially if we have our radar coded for this. So when this individual bundle of energy interacts with a larger group, Einstein also talked about how that group is a unified field of energy that can make a difference on the presenter, on the person, and back and forth. Here's what I consider a natural experiment. It's a controlled experiment in that regard. The NBA plays 84 games a year, 42 away, 42 at home. Teams regularly lose almost twice as many games away as they do at home. And it's a controlled study, besides maybe a little bit of travel. They play the same teams, but they're subjected to the negative energy field of 70, 80,000 people in an arena away and a positive energy field of most of the people in the home arena. And it makes a difference. So this is the kind of thing that we want to be aware of. Now, let's move that to an individual level and an application that I think your listeners will identify with. Whenever you begin a conversation, whenever a speaker begins a conversation, same with the written word, but whenever a speaker begins a conversation, what we know now is that the first few words will boot up a particular mindset in the listener that will then process the entire remainder of the conversation. So, for example, when someone begins in a collaborative way, that boots up a mindset that's mediated by the neurochemical system of connection, of bonding, of collaboration, oxytocin. And the remainder of the conversation will be processed in that way in a collaborative framework when it's sustained. Now, consider when someone begins in a different way, something that's perceived as challenging, as pejorative, critical, or just instructive in a, you know, with an edge, a different mindset is booted up, one that is mediated by cortisol and adrenaline, the chemicals of trust, of activation, and that entire mindset of looking askance and kind of protecting oneself processes the entire remainder of the conversation. So this is just an example of how when we talk to someone, it's helpful to be aware of these mind and brain principles. I do as we've touched on before, I do a training for organizations that incorporates the mind and brain sciences with principles of mentor coaching to create changes that last. A simple but powerful example is applying conversational, social, and emotional intelligence to interactions, especially to leadership, and how these conversations unfold by the leaders makes a significant difference on everything that follows, not just the first few words of a conversation, but by the entire culture, by the entire organization as well, because this is highly contagious without people even being aware of it being so or knowing exactly what cause and effect is.
So interesting as you're talking, and thank you for sharing this in such a detailed and interesting way. So, you know, it gives us all these different lenses to look through. And it reminds me of a couple of things that when I'm working with leaders in a new consulting engagement, I spend a lot of time talking with them about the, what I would call the messaging, right? What are those first few words, right? What is the message? How do they want to come across? What do they want to convey for the rest of the group, knowing it's going to set the stage for everything else? Pretty much. And the other thing I've noticed too in myself through, you know, some trial and error over the last 20 years is that how I am entering, if I'm facilitating, you know, an engagement, facilitating a session with a group of people, how I enter that room and my mindset at the time and everything that I bring into it will pretty much and sometimes dramatically impact what happens next. And I'm just one person. Absolutely. Really, really interesting. Yeah.
The question launches the story. You know, a common perception is that by coaches and by corporate leaders, you enhance performance by pointing out mistakes and emphasizing doing better. Well, we
Right.
We ask about what we want more of. Now, good parents have known this for centuries. If you want a behavior to continue or to enhance, you respond to it. Whether good or bad, it's gonna enhance, it's gonna grow. And you know, human systems grow in the direction of what they persistently ask questions about. So this is important in terms of what leaders do, and it's important to align, for example, a corporate identity with the individual identities to be sure that there's an appreciation of the basic needs and the basic ideals of each of the people in that organization, that there are three components, for example, about the neuroscience of success and performance. One is autonomy, the desire that each person has to direct his or her own life, so that is a sense of effectiveness. And then mastery. Mastery is the second, the desire to get better at something that matters. And that's part of what motivates us to have progress, to have mastery. And then a sense of purpose, to align what our own ideals are with the ideals of the organization, the yearning to do something, to do what we do, have meaning beyond ourselves, to be something larger than ourselves.
Absolutely. And as we look at this in relation, everything you just shared, in terms of changes that last, right, and we focus on what we want more of, right, versus what's not working. How does all of this increase the general, in your experience, the general sense of trust within an organization? I mean, does that connect to trust?
Well, trust is part of a mindset of connection and collaboration. And remember, that's one of the things I mentioned with the conversational intelligence of beginning a statement or an interaction in a certain way, that it's going to boot up a mindset that contains trust. It's part of a whole mindset that's mediated by the entire neurochemical system of oxytocin. So it's a mindset that becomes part of the culture. It becomes part of the way people do things, and it also informs not just the individual, but the corporate identity and the momentum going forward, that in an individual way, whenever your needs and ideals align with your strategy and goals, all of you is going in the same direction. Same for a corporation.
Yeah, so everything we've just been speaking about and you've just been sharing with us really is about alignment, right?
Exactly.
At a high level.
Exactly.
How do we all stay aligned and go in that same direction, right? Get on the same boat. So to speak.
And for
each
individual, the most important thing, I have seen videos of normal infant observations back in my psychoanalytic days as early as 3 months of age that show and demonstrate vividly that the most basic desire that we have as a human being, beginning as early as 3 months, and I think even earlier than that, we just don't have a way to measure it, is effectiveness, the desire to be a cause. Now, fast forward. Everything that we do in our lives, all the way through our lives, is to be effective. And the experience of that is mastery. Now, in some situations, and I used to see people who had to do extreme things in their environment, in their family, to be effective, and those were people who were called patients. But everybody does something to be effective. So that's what we want to be in alignment with, say, at what we're talking about now in terms of a corporate culture, is how can each person be a contributor to that sense of personal effectiveness and a higher cause, a purpose that aligns with their own identity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the challenge of leaders.
It is the challenge of leaders. Yeah, absolutely. It's a challenge of leaders, and it's something I'd love to delve into a little bit more after we take our next break here. So this is Claudette Rowley. You are listening to Cultural Brilliance Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break.
Is traditional medicine not working for you? Do you still feel as if your health isn't 100%? Here at the Holistic Medical Center, Dr. Nushin Darvish and the qualified staff look through the dimensions of wellness and start a healing plan prioritized to your needs. Our physicians assess the whole you until complete health is achieved. Get the help you need by visiting drdarvish.com or call 425-451-0404.
Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant, Powerful Moms helping everyday women create extraordinary lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.
Are you ready to stop stress, anxiety, and low self-esteem from running your life? Join award-winning author Dr. Friedemann Schaub for Empowerment Radio and learn breakthrough solutions to switch out of survival mode and approach every day with great ease, joy, and purpose. Tune in the first and third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific to Empowerment Radio with host Dr. Friedemann Schaub on Transformation Talk Radio. Visit thefearandanxietysolution.com to learn more.
Interested in deepening your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit www.esotericstudies.net.
The Janice Underwood Show, helping you create the life you want, not the life you tolerate. Tune in each Monday, 9 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as Janice delves into the life creator system and the next step in your spiritual evolution. Janice Underwood is gifted at helping spiritually minded people shift their mindsets to unleash the creator within. Our souls wish to wake us up. Those of us listening hear the call. Do you? For more information, visit JaniceUnderwood.com.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Hi, everybody. This is Claudette Rowley back here on Cultural Brilliance Radio with my guest, Dr. Dave Kruger. If those of you have been listening, we have been having a really interesting and I think very in-depth and insightful conversation about the neuroscience of change in individuals and in organizations. And so I know, Dave, one thing we wanted to talk about today as we're coming to the close of the show is just how understanding the neuroscience of change and everything you've talked about so far can help us intentionally create organizational cultures that support people?
Well, that's a great question. It's a simple question and not so simple an answer.
Exactly.
Remember our discussion about how you create or respond to an energy field, about away teams, mm-hmm. lose almost twice as many games as home. This is,
right.
This is also a model for the energy field of an organization and the impetus of a leader to create a focus that's positive, that's engaging. And one of the things that I think about it as the most important thing that I can give or be for a mentor coaching client, and that's to believe in them. Because what we know now in neuroscience is that belief in someone transforms a state of mind in the recipient to a more creative, integrative state. In other words, believing in somebody is state changing for them. And when somebody is in a state that is more synthetic and integrative and creative, they're able to do and be different things. They're transported to places they never would have gone before. Now, this same thing can happen with an organization, just like the energy field of individual to individual can be transposed to stadiums or cultures. It's something that I think is something to think about, to believe in someone, to activate the parts of their brains that have to do with their identity, their purpose, and in some way incorporate that in a tangible way into a focus and a belief system and a purpose for the organization, and the two are going to match and be in synchrony. And think about, and this is a kind of a goofy sidebar here, but think about how it works when that doesn't happen. About how things now nationally are sort of chaotic. There's an allure to chaos because it activates parts of the brain that have to do with how mysteries compel engagement, unresolved problems become more preoccupying, suspense sustains interest, how novelty creates curiosity. We want to find out what happens next. When there's a non-truth or an exaggeration, it activates the error detection mechanism of the brain. So that adds to the sense of chaos, but chaos is compelling. It's enticing because it's activating. It's sort of like the error detection mechanism of the brain. We're driving along on a freeway and suddenly there's a wreck and we're rubbernecking. We're focused on it because it's activating. It's better than the monotony of nothing. It's why news that bleeds leads at 5 o'clock. It's why we have an enticement with chaos, even though we may abhor it or not like what we see. We don't see what we don't believe or don't want, and we cherry-pick data that supports our notions and then omits contradictory beliefs. So there's an allure to chaos because it's activating. Even though it's negative, it's activating. So this is a model of how not to run an organization, because it can be activating, but it can be so in a negative way. So this is the distinction and the discerning that we have to make about looking at things, creating a framework and a focus of what's going to be positive. Remember, I said that we grow in the direction of what we're asked questions about. We focus out of an infinite number of possibilities on certain things. So we have to be sure, whether it's working with an individual client or a corporate entity, that we're focusing on the right things, because that focus will determine what we see as well as what we don't see, and then how we have, perhaps in addition to that, a strategic way of proceeding.
It's so true, and this is reminding me of a couple of years ago. I had a really wonderful mentor, the kind of mentor that, organically evolves, right? You weren't looking for a mentor, and she showed up, and she had this very, very positive person, and brilliant and visionary, and she completely believed in me. In fact, she would say things like, you know what, I'm sure, Claudia, I'm sure you're going to come up with a great solution for that. And I remember thinking at the time, oh, well, if she thinks I am, then I guess I will. And I did. And it was just, came to mind as you were talking about, you know, when we believe in people, what happens to them, right?
Yeah, it changes.
That I very easily rose to the different next bar, so to speak.
Here's how we can measure that in addition, mm-hmm. a related way, but yet even more vividly. Consider mm-hmm. when someone has an aha moment, a moment of insight. If you were to mm-hmm. look at an fMRI scan, brain scan, at that very moment, three different parts of the brain light up. They activate, and someone is transported to a state of mind that is more synthetic and integrative and creative. Consider what happens when someone is given a fact, information, data, an order. Nothing happens. No part of the brain lights up. So what we want to do, as your mentor did, was to believe in you and activate a component of your experience in your brain that you then lived into. And that's what we want to do, and we have to couple that with a plan, a strategy, and goals so that somebody knows what the next step is as well as where they're going. So that's what a business plan, that's what a map does. When you have a map, you know where you are, you know where you're going, you can measure progress along the way, and you can also tell what's detour and what's distraction. And here's a very brief story. I know we're running short on time, but Terry Fox ran the Marathon of Hope. It's a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. Since he had an artificial leg, he ran with a shuffle and a hop, but he managed to average 24 miles a day, completed the race in 143 days. He was asked in an interview immediately after the race, how did you manage to keep going when it was challenging and when you were exhausted? And he just looked at the interviewer and said, I just ran to the next telephone pole. And he did that all the way across Canada. Now, he knew where the telephone poles were headed, but he shrank the change to the next step. So that's all we ever have to do in life is the next right thing. And then what do we do? The next best thing after that.
And that is such a great note to wrap the show up on. Thank you. Right? Is we go to the next step, we assess and go to the next step. So
exactly.
Thank you for sharing that inspiring story here at the end. And I want to thank you so much, Dave, for being here with us today.
Oh, my privilege, Claudette. It was fun. Thank you.
It was really fun, and I love the insight and the information and your great stories that bring it all to life. And for everybody listening today, I want to thank you for tuning in once again to Cultural Brilliance Radio. Always honored to be here with you. Please join us the second and fourth Fridays of each month at 10 a.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern. Have a great week, and we'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to the hit show Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. You can download this podcast and find out more about Claudette and her breakthrough work at ClaudetteRowley.com. Please contact Claudette and find out how you can create a brilliant culture.